Just want to make sure that it looks good. Does it look good?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Good. That's all that matters. Hello, and welcome back to our very final, our last module together in the advanced DSC configuration stuff. And this is a very important module because it gives you an awesome idea of the direction and the complexity that you can remove and that you can do in your environment with something called partial configurations. Now, one of the things to keep a note of is partial configurations. This is our first look at this. This is something from the February release of WMF5. It's our first look at it. So excuse our dust. I'll just tell you right now, I got a little dust floating around in mine, but it's okay. It's going to get all cleaned up. The concept here, though, is a little bit challenging. And so that's the most important part. Let's take a look at the slide, see where we're going. And, well, we'll look at partial configurations. So this is Module 7, Advanced Configurations. I'm going to review the fact that we've already talked about reusable and nested and what those are, and then we'll dive into partial configurations. And so Advanced Configurations, here's what we're doing. Just as a quick review, Jeffrey, the nested configurations, those are when we're, actually what I meant to say there was nested, the resources we were creating with the DSE resource designer, how it makes the templates for us, and we can have one module that has multiple resources in it that we can then pull into our configurations. Now, when it comes to the word reusable, I often forget, I'm so used to calling it a parameterized script, which means to me, takes parameters. You guys talk about reusable resources and reusable configurations because they're adding all the parameters to it. A very important concept we've done actually the last 2 days is to make things that you can just use them over and over again.
Yep.
Now this tricky one, and I want to bring up the slide for the production guy so he doesn't beat me after the shoot's over with.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And the partial configurations, let's talk about the concept of this. The idea is that the LCM, which right now we've been using to either, you know, you're going to send me a config or I'm going to pull a config.
Yep.
And I'm going to run this config. But now what you're saying is you want the LCM to be able to run parts of configurations?
Well, no, it's to be able to get configurations from different sources. Okay. So imagine back to that original, the model we just talked about. We said, hey, imagine there's the networking guy and he's going to deal with all that complexity. And then there's the SQL guy and he's going to deal with all that complexity. And then there's the application guy and he's going to deal with that complexity. And then you're going to stitch that all together. So that's one model, an authoring experience. That these people then go configure authoring tools that then someone stitches together, creates a uniform document here, and then pushes to the system. So that's one model. Partial configurations is a different way of doing it. Partial configuration says, hey, my networking guy, you control the networking stuff. You are going to provide, you're going to set up a pull server or a push server, and you're going to push networking configurations to these servers. You SQL guys, you are going to push your SQL configuration to these servers. You application guy, you're going to push your application settings to these servers. And then the LCM will then grab these configurations, these partial configurations from multiple sources, stitch it all into a single comprehensive document, and then go make it so.
Now, this is one of the times when I can see where a lot of people are going to say, well, it's like, you know, it's like group policies. We're just going to end up doing a resultant set at the end of a group policy, and it's kind of like, well, it's a little bit different than it's kind of as you describe in an environment. One of the challenges is that you, just what you said, I'm the networking guy. I know what these settings should be.
Yep.
You shouldn't be changing those.
Yep.
Just like I shouldn't be messing with the SQL stuff.
Yeah, so just to be clear, in some sense you could say, oh, it's the same as the resultant set of policies. And at but some level, yes. Another level, it's very simple. Okay, so you know there's a number of different mechanisms, and the reason why this didn't show up in the very beginning was the team was all ready to like, let's go do this. I said, no. This is exactly where everybody runs their ship on the rocks. So we are not doing this until we are clear about what the debuggability story is, what the how is it going to be comprehensible, how are you going to deal with conflicts. Now look, here's the general story for conflicts. Don't do that. Okay? No, I'm sort of not joking. I really mean that. In a DevOps world, you have simplicity, simplicity, simplicity. So the networking guy should just do networking. The SQL guy should just do SQL. The application guy should just do application. And if they start coloring each other's areas, bad things are going to happen. So don't do that. Now, the enterprise solution to that tends to be very complex, you know, group policy,
right,
result domain, and it gives you the feeling of great power right up until the time something doesn't work, and then your true lack of power, the true lack of concept, right, the true I'm a miss comes to bear. You have no idea. And so what we do is we're very, very simple. You're trying to avoid conflicts. If you have a conflict, here's the answer. Go talk to that guy and tell him to stop doing it. Okay? That's the way you do it.
Well, but that gets back to your premise, though, of keeping it simple. Because if you were to build the LCM to try to handle all possibilities of all conflicts, now there's a lot of complexity into that.
Yep. So then we ended up adding one thing, which is to say, if that human interaction is not the right way to do it, what you can do is you can grant exclusive ownership over a set of resources to a source. You can say, look, you know, it would be great if the networking guys could do their firewall rules, the SQL guys could do their firewall rules, the application guys could do their firewall rules, and have that all work together. But if you guys can't make that work together, we're done having this conversation. The networking guys own the firewall rules. You go talk to them.
Oh, and then the network guys are the only ones then that can utilize those resources to set those.
So that's the conflict resolution policy option that you have. And it turns out to be very, very, very simple, powerful, effective, but very, very simple. It is one mechanism. If you guys can't work it out yourselves, you can configure the machine to grant exclusive ownership and control over a set of named resources to a source.
I love it. I tell you what, why don't we start to take a look at the configuration of this? Now, production guy, I've got you your slide this time. It's the last one, too. So let's go take a look and let me go over to, I'm cycling through so many things. I lost where I was. Where am I? There's where I am. So, it says composite resource structure, but that is certainly not correct. I've got some partial configuration notes for you. There's a lot of information, by the way, in the documentation that came with WMF 5, the preview release. If you want to take a look, here's some of the information that they give. This is actually from the release itself, and I wanted to show you how this is going to take a look. So what we're going to do is on the LCM itself, so we're going to configure the LCM, take a look at the settings. His overall mode is pull. And so nothing looks uniquely weird here. But now look, we've got a special keyword, partial configuration. And we're going to give it a name. And we're going to set its mode. Now the example that's in the document for right now is pretty simple and straightforward. His refresh mode is going to be push. And then we've got a partial two. He's going to be pull, and we've defined that he's going to be an SMB pull. And you can also define that another configuration partial three, is going to be a push, or it can be a pull. I should change this to pull because actually it should be pull.
By the way, were you seeing partial one, partial two, partial three? Think networking, SQL,
yes,
application.
Absolutely. I'm going to show that as well. Oh. So here's one, you know, where you can do the web configuration. So there's nothing that looks right here too bizarre. And got another one. So let me open up one.
Earlier, you had asked the question, why do we change to make, it used to be local configuration,
local configuration manager.
And now it's configuration with an attribute called DSC local configuration.
Right.
It was because of this. Because now all of a sudden, the local configuration, so did you show that? To go into the, do IntelliSense up here?
Up here? At this guy?
No. Like right above settings.
Right above settings. Oh, yeah, let's do that.
You see, because we do this, now we're in a configuration status. Look at all the things that we've added. Configuration repository, web, the share, repository, blah, blah, blah. partial configurations, and then settings. So this gave us a lot more freedom to be able to express this, have a better authoring experience, a better IntelliSense experience. Before, it was all kind of hidden underneath one thing and didn't work.
Yeah.
We would end up like putting it all underneath settings, and then that didn't feel right to us.
And this actually works out very well. Both, I mean, and it's going to sound weird when I say this, but it looks better on the screen, which means it makes it easier for me to maintain these in different settings and the IntelliSense for it. So I really like that.
They're pointing out that your description, if you scroll down to partial two description, it says partial one.
Depends on. Oh, it's a depends.
Nope. Partial the description.
There
you go. Did we talk about the power of the community or what?
Boy, I love the community. Thanks for saving me on that. By the way, that's the one in the actual documentation, so make sure you make these changes as well. if you're going to go off of that one. Let me show you another one here. I think this is this the actual one? No, this is another one that came out. Let me just show you a real one. That real one as the one that I put together, which... Let's see how that goes. So I've got it. I still call it partial meta, but a configuration. I'm going to pass a parameter to it for GUID. This is going to go to node 3. I'm actually going to change this to node 1 because I don't know what happened to node. Well, I'll leave it at node 3. We'll try that first. Settings, again, are pull. I'm going to do a partial configuration called web server. And I'm going to have a configuration that is, it's going to be a push to the web server. And I've got a partial configuration for, because lack of being able to think of anything else, I just call it NLB. This will be the network load balancing settings for the web servers in that farm. These will be pulling their settings, and in this case, from an SMB share. And did I do another one? Oh, and I did a file share, like if you were doing it, these are the actual setups for those resources. So take a look here, I've called this, he's gonna do file share. Now I need to put in the definition for those repositories for file share, where their locations are, the source is. And I did a location for the pull as well, which this is my pull server that's out there. So that's the configuration. In this case, I'm gonna send the GUID, I'm gonna send that partial configuration. Oh, let's just run it and create it. And then when he's done there, we'll just go ahead and set DSC local configuration manager path. You know what? I'll bet you I was smart enough to have already, so I didn't have to risk typing that out. Goes verbose and it sends it out to the machine S3. Now, before we go into the configuration, this makes the LCM look a little bit different. Now, I know there's files underneath System32 configuration. We have a folder for partial configurations there. But let's take a look at get DSC local configuration manager for sim session S3.
No.
Oh.
Do show object.
Oh. Yo, we're gonna do show object. Lee, you're awesome. $A equals show object $A. Up, hit enter.
Carriage return is your
friend. Yeah, carriage return is your friend. And let's do. See, I'm learning.
That's awesome.
So let's see, configuration. So let's see if they got their
partial configuration prep.
Yep. So here are the configuration managers that got set up. File share and DSC HTTP. The partial configurations property. Look, partial config for web server. Let's go ahead and open him up. And partial config for NLB.
Strings show up as have a property length.
Property length of it.
Gave Lee the fix so that he didn't take it yet.
Oh, that's okay. I still love him. He's okay. You fold him up and put him in your pocket. I love the guy. He's awesome. Anyways, so this isn't too much different than we had been seeing before. But there's where your partial configurations are. So. That's how they're getting set up in there. Now, if we want to utilize these, I'm going to, I hit the breakpoint again, F8. Oh, come on, show me the config. Oh, now something's, that's what it is. I need to close this. Thank you. And let's bring up a configuration. So, now I don't understand what I was doing with my configuration. I cannot believe I just, So I have two configurations that I want to use. Remember, I was going to have one as push and one as it was going to pull it from an SMB share. What I need to do is, just like we did before, I'm going to take the config for the NLB, which is all it's doing is a Windows feature, NLB, and making it present. I'm going to run this configuration and I'm going to put it on my SMB pull server. So that's the first configuration I want to set up. So I'm going to do that. Remember, I have to do the whole GUID trick again. And we've gone through this in previous DSC MVA. And this is going to create for me my, it's going to copy my configuration out. And I was getting this yesterday. I should just fix it right now. My destination, C:\. So I'm going to get the GUID from S3, and I'm going to rename the moth for S3 to a GUID. And if you missed that from yesterday, go ahead and check it out. And now I'm going to copy that file to the destination, which will put it into the share, my SMB pull server. And I have to make a checksum on it. And I want to go out after I make the checksum and make sure that it's looking like it's okie-dokie hunky-dory. And you can see I've run this a couple of times, so I have it out there. I've got a configuration out there for it on the SMB pull. So this is the configuration for pull. And now I've got a configuration that we're going to push. And we've got a different commandlet for this. The push side of the partial configuration was I was just going to push a web server to it. And remember, I had a depends on for the NLB that this had to be done first. So that configuration for NLB isn't actually ever going to run. Well, it's not going to install NLB till I get a web server sent out to that server. Now, here's the interesting thing. While I'm going to run this configuration to create it, I want to push that configuration out, but we have a new commandlet called publish. If you try to do start DSC configuration to push this out to the push part, it's going to come back and say, no, you can't do that.
Don't do that.
And so how do I get a push configuration to an LCM configured with other partial pulls where the main is configured as a pull and it's publish DSC configuration publish. Will allow you to do that. So I'm going to publish it out of that configuration, computer name S3, and he will get his web server. You'll see that he'll actually start to go through. It's out there for him. It saved it into the partial configuration, and I can tell him now to update, and he'll go through and start to update the configurations that are out there. Now, the web server will have to get installed first before he'll ever be able to do the NLB one. So he'll go through and configure that. And here in a few moments, we'll get a web server configured out there. Partial configurations aren't hard to set up and work with. But the concept is a little like, I think I saw somebody doing the Inception thing with a VM inside of a VM inside of a VM inside of a VM. Partial configurations are, you have to kind of think these through. Who's taking charge of what?
Yeah, you know what?
And the depends on have to be thought through.
It reminds me of like one of my first programming projects ever. I used to work for defense industry doing bombs. And one of the issues we had was we built these missiles, and I had to solve the problem, like, will this missile ever see a tank? Because the way it worked was we had this missile with a seeker, and the seeker had these two sensors with angular look-down angles. And then they spun around in a circle, and then we had a different search pattern. We had a zigzag, and we had a spiral. And then that on the seeker was a look-down angle from the missile, which, so basically, missiles fly. You had a four-dimensional flight. Now, it turns out that the missile flies with a sort of like this, right? So there's a, they're not tangential to their trajectory.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
And then, upon that, the seeker had a look-down angle. And then on that look-down angle, you had these two, you know, there's an axis, you had these two angular things that spun and then did this complex thing. And the question is, okay, so you're sending this thing, and the question is, I got some tanks there, will I see the tanks, right? So you think about that and you say,
Right. Just
like, what? And the answer is, it's something sounds complicated in action, is Cauchy-Euler equations. And so basically, here's the trick. The trick is you do each one of the steps that I mentioned by itself. Okay, so you got the four-dimensional flight. That's pretty straightforward. And then four-dimensional flight, then you use a Cauchy-Euler equation to then say, well, at any given point, I got this look-down angle, so what's that? And then I got a look-down angle there and there. And so basically, it's all these, like, rules. You know, here I do a cosine, and then I do a sine, and then I do this, and then I do that. These Cauchy-Euler equations. And what you have to do is you take each step, and you isolate it in and of itself. And when you fix all the other variables, that one variable is really, really simple. And then you fix that one, and you do the next one, and that's very, very simple. And you do that one, and everything's really, really simple. And then when you put them together, you get this incredibly gorgeous mathematics, which in and of itself, you look back and you say, wow, that's really complex. But each step is very, very simple, and you can do amazing things with it.
And so with the partial configurations like that, if we take it one step at a time, let me do the networking. And that's going to be a configuration. And let me do this. I know that we're going to do a server setup. It's going to need the networking. It's going to need these particular features on all of our base servers. So I'll have a base server configuration.
Yep.
And these are probably different teams in a lot of companies anyways.
Yep.
If you take it one piece at a time, when you're all done, you've solved a very complex problem.
Exactly.
But and easier.
And you're able to say, ignore that, ignore that, ignore that. Well, that's really simple. I get it.
Well, one of the things I really like about partial configurations especially is the problem that it solves, creating one giant, enormous configuration that had everything in it that everybody had their hands into. The SQL guy had his hands in the same place where I was doing the networking stuff, and we could have problems with that. So this allows each team to create their own configurations on their own pool servers that will be brought in then to those machines. I think that's pretty marvelous stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, it is. Now, look, we have some extra time.
Oh.
And I think this would be a great time. We have spent, we have done two DSC MVAs together.
Yeah.
And we've covered a tremendous amount of stuff.
Stuff.
And this stuff, most of this stuff is going to stay as it is and get improved moving forward. We've been using the February WMF5 preview.
Yep.
And I think this would be a great time to kind of, I don't know, tie it all together with...
With what you're doing...
As far or how you feel about using this in production today, what should we be using in production today, and where should we be going?
Great. So first, before we get that, there's a question in the chat form asking, "Hey, can I run these resources?" So what happens? You send this configuration file to the LCM. Remember, the LCM runs as a WMI provider. It runs in the local system context. Okay, and so then people asked, oh, well, can I run it in the caller's context? And the answer is, absolutely no. No, ever. And the problem with that is if we were able to do that, then what will happen is you'll end up with resources that only run in that user's context and then don't work in the system context. So it's very important that we never allow that. That always runs in the system context. Now, that's not to say that you always want to run in the local system context. And so we are working on a feature. I think it's checked in, but you don't have it. I have it. You don't have it. Where for any given resource, you will be able to say, I would like this resource to run as. You know, we have run as in PowerShell. Ooh. So you'll be able to say these resources run as and give a set of credentials.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
That can be really useful.
Very useful.
Because there's been some instances that I've known of with configurations I've worked with where there's remoting and I can see where getting out of the system. Yep, I like that quite a lot.
Okay, so
not that I can form a sentence anymore, but I like it.
I picked right up on that.
Okay.
So, but then the question is, okay, well, where are we? And if you take a look, I think the release notes say it best. So let's take a look at the release notes. So here are the release notes for February, Windows Management Framework, release notes for February, okay? And so here, you should read these things. They're actually pretty darn good. Here we go. How's that? And it gives you what systems it runs on. Oh, didn't mean to do that. Sorry. And tells you how to install it. And here we added a section because Indeed, some people are going to production with the WMFs, and that's perfectly fine, but you not need to know what you're in for. So these current WMFs are what we call active branch. Active branch says we're continuing to advance it, so we're trying to release it every couple months, and if you have a bug, great. Chances are we'll fix it in the next one or the one after that. But what we're not going to do is we're not going to go back and hot fix or patch the one that's there. So if you have a problem with the December WMF, the answer is maybe it's fixed in the February WMF. And if it's not, we'll see if we can fix it in the next one. We won't go back and patch it to the December WMF. Now here I want to draw a distinction. We should probably have two names, but we don't. We just have one name, and that's the WMF. We have another WMF, which was the one we released with, Windows PowerShell version 4. When we released PowerShell version 4, we released a servicing WMF. I don't remember how we talk about this, but that WMF goes down level, and if you have problems with that version, we will hot patch that. Okay, we'll do patches.
So anything that's been done with version 4, and just to let everybody know, this is kind of weird. Version 4 of PowerShell shipped with DSC already in it, and you can put that into production, but around, and was it December or January, there was a KB update to version 4. It's an update to version 4 that updated specifically DSC. Mm-hmm. So that's the one that gets updated. So if you don't have that KB update, and I forget the number off the top of my head, you can look it up and you can get it. It's an optional update right now. You can get it and put it into V4. That's what people are been using in production. And then we have these WMF5 preview releases.
Now we have these previews, these preview WMFs. That's the way I should have said it. The preview WMFs are active branch, okay? So active branch says, if you have a problem, we'll try and fix it in the next release. Now the benefit of that is, you can take a look at something that we're doing and say, I don't like that, or you're missing something, or I think you should do it this way, and you have the opportunity to change that. That's obviously nothing we would do to something that's a long-term supported thing. So literally, you can come back and say, hey, that published DSC configuration, I think publish is a goofy name.
It's a goofy name,
It should be called, tie it all together. Something, whatever you want, some other name. And we'll take a look at that and say, hey, you know, that's maybe a good idea. Maybe we'll change that. Okay, so then the question to you is, well, how do you know which things we might change and which things we won't? And we have a new mechanism for this. We call it the release notes. So let's go back to the release notes. So here what we're doing is we're talking about the scenarios and we talk about the design status. And so we say, hey, develop DSC resources using classes in Windows PowerShell. That is now a stable design. In the December version, we had a different set of parameters or attributes to declare things. Yeah. We did some, got some feedback on that. We changed that, and now, and so in the December release, that mechanism was experimental, which meant it can change. It has changed. If you wrote to an experimental feature in December using DSC classes, classes for DSC resources, in February, you need to change that code in order to make it work, okay? But now, that is stable. Stable means you can write it, and unless something extraordinary happens, and I want to be very clear about this, it's not a guarantee that it's not as strong a guarantee as like a long-term stable release, is, but it is a, unless something extraordinary happens, this is what we're going with. We're pretty happy with this. The experimental stuff is where you come back and you say, hey, I'd like it to do this way, I'd like it to do that way, and we will tweak things, and then as quickly as possible get to stable with those. So, for instance, the DSC script, resource script debugging. There are some challenges to that. I've got a very particular idea of how that should be changed to be a much better experience, and that's fine. We can do that because it's experimental. We do support inheritance with our classes in this release.
Which the developers are now going, oh, yeah!
Oh, yeah, it's rocking. and that's experimental. We have this new refresh mode. That's experimental. The partial configuration stuff, everything that we saw today or just now, that's experimental. And, oh, we didn't talk about Script Analyzer.
Oh, we got to do something quick. We've got 2 minutes. You keep talking.
Okay. So we have this new thing called PowerShell Script Analyzer. So one of the things you're seeing is this desire. I mentioned it earlier. We now that we can put things in repositories and make it very easy to go get repositories, the question is, well, okay, Jeffrey, you and Microsoft published a repository that published some code to that repository. I trust you, but this Jason guy, like, does he know what the heck he's talking about? Like, is there any good code there? I mean, and so what we want to do is we want to help you better trust the code, right? Trust the quality of the code, et cetera. And so too, you might be sitting there saying, well, I wrote this code, but I want to publish it. Am I going to be embarrassed if I publish it, et cetera? So now we have a script analyzer. And are you going to show us that?
I'm going to show it to you.
No, okay. So what the script analyzer does, it's an experimental feature. But what you can do is, in the previous version of the OS, or previous version of PowerShell, we introduced the AST. Have we talked about that? The AST, Abstract Syntax Tree. That always kind of mumbly in the mouth. Abstract Syntax Tree. It's basically the thing that allows us to transform a script into a data structure that then you can reason against and you can program against and do all sorts of wonderful stuff. That's the thing that allows us to do this fantastic IntelliSense, is the AST. Now, what we've done is we've coupled the AST with a set of things that go look at the code and say, you shouldn't be doing that. That's not the best practice, et cetera. Now, these rules have been developed by the community over the course of many, many years. And now we have code instead of just like, oh, I got a document, I got a piece of code. Now, you got a piece of code, I got another piece of code. That piece of code will tell you whether that piece of code is applying the rules or not applying the rules. And so that is the script code analyzer. Here's the way it will work eventually. One, when you go to publish your code, you're going to have to publish code that passes all the rules. Because it'll come and say, hey, you're not following the rules, my buddy. That's not something you want to go publish. Next is there'll probably be some way to override that, or you might be able to override that through other means. So when you do a get, we're going to also apply the rules. So that, nice. You know, you might be able to figure out a way around our mechanisms and publish your code to the gallery. But when someone tries to pull it down, we're going to run those rules again and then say, you really sure you want to load this? Look at all the things that are wrong with it. So again, it's a mechanism to drive the community to have really high quality code. Now, the other thing here is that you can extend it with your own rules. Now, these rules, honestly, you're parsing the AST. That can be kind of chunky. That's okay. There are some bit heads out there that love writing that stuff, and you'll be able to get a bunch of those. And often what you're really going to do is you're going to grab something that's sort of like what you want, and then you're going to change it to meet your rule. So,
and also, I think what's great about this, and I'm going to need your help here, but yeah. What I think what's great about this is that, think about this, you have an analyzer that will be able to come up and tell you if there's violations to the rules. Think about the admins that you have today that you are going to start bringing up through PowerShell. They're going to start writing scripts. They're going to start making modules that are starting that growth path. I mean, you know, new IT people are born every single day. This is a way to help you bring them up with the correct practices that you want to establish right from the very get-go. So the learning curve is shorter. And not as hard, and it happens quicker for them. So take a look at my screen real quick. There's a module out there when you apply the WMF 5 February release. I did get module list available. It's called the PS Script Analyzer. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to import that module. Import. Why am I yelling at everybody? Why is the cap lock thing on all the time? Import module, name PS Script. That's good enough. I'll just put a star in because I don't feel like talking about it. It would help if I could spell dash name. And there we go. And I'm going to do git command on that module just so that we could see what's inside of it.
Oh, star,
stop, star, 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 star. So I've got I've got invoke script analyzers. What I'm guessing I want to use to invoke this against a script. Now, I'm going to just take a wild guess here that invoke script analyzer, and I'm going to see it's got to have a path to something, right? So I have a path. I've got a test script. I made a test script.
Good.
So let's fire and see what happens. Now, I just love this. Now, because of my view, this is kind of like out of control. So let's make this a little bit prettier to look at. Let's take...
3 lines, 10 errors. That's good.
Three... Yeah, this is real good. But take a look at some of the things we got. Avoid using commandlet aliases. What? He used a commandlet alias? Warning. And it says an alias is an alternative. You guys know we don't usually recommend you use aliases in your scripts. Let's take a look at another one. Avoid using positional parameters. In other words, and I'm going to show you the script in a minute. I did not put in all of the parameters. I used a positional parameter and it caught it. Something else, avoid using position. There's another positional parameter it caught. It caught aliases. Provide verbose message. There is no call for write verbose. It functioned gimme foo. He's not going to like that. There's no comment help. Look, avoid using write host because I put in a write host. Oh, it's catching me on everything. Oh, and you're not using the approved verbs. Look at my script. Gimme foo. Oh, this is terrible. It caught me on all of this stuff. All right. I'll follow instructions. I'll make it a get. And okay, I won't use any aliases. So get service. And I'll put in the positional parameters. No write host. I'll turn it into write output as I'm supposed to. See, I actually think this is one of the best. This is great for kind of like building a code review kind of thing, which is a great conversation to start to have. IT guys generally don't do well their first code review because they take it, it's an offensive thing. Get over that. Code reviews are helpful. This can help you write better code. Don't get angry at it. It's there to help you. I think it helps you learn. Yeah. I love this.
Yeah.
Big fan.
Yeah.
Big.
And if you say, hey, I think you're that, run it again, by the way.
Let me save that. And did I leave my? Let me save that. Let's invoke it again. What? I still have mistakes? Oh, because I'm not putting any comment-based help in yet.
Yeah. Okay. So now.
And I still have another one in there somewhere.
Right. Host. Yeah. Okay. So now, go down and select one of those names. Go down. Okay. So let's say provide commandlet help. Select that name.
Provide.
And copy it.
Copy it.
Now do up arrow, space, dash E, tab.
So if I don't want, I don't want to.
Because you might have a different opinion. You might say, yeah, no, you're wrong.
Yeah, I don't want to, this is going to be a helper function. I don't need comment-based help. Stop telling me that.
Yep.
Now I can run it, and there it goes. Doesn't now matter. I don't get it.
Programmers have opined that we need a way to express this rule suppression within the code itself. In most languages, there's something called a pragma that says, look, I know what I'm doing. Stop complaining about that. We are looking at that. That makes a ton of sense. We do not have that right now. By the way, but the other thing is there's exclude rules and there's include rules. And so you can write your own rules and include them. Now, here's why that's important. It's perfectly fine to have a script do invoke expression. Okay? Mm-hmm. Perfectly fine. However, invoke expression is one of the most dangerous things going in the language. I mean, we have a very small number of them, and I think there's one really dangerous thing in the language, and it is invoke expression. So if you were going to go pull down code, I think you would want to have a rule that says, warn me if it does an invoke expression. Now, let's talk about this a second, because this is where it gets really exciting. So I'm going to go pull down some piece of code from the internet, and let's just say it's a couple thousand lines of code. Now, obviously, you can't just go take a couple thousand lines of code and run it in your production servers, because maybe it's good, maybe it's bad. Like, you have to own that, and you have to understand what the security risks are. So, imagine you go and you know what the security issues are, right? Hey, I don't want you calling restart computer. I don't want you calling invoke code. I don't want you deleting things, et cetera. You have a list of things. Now, you write up rules for that. And when you pull that down and you run your rules, it'll say, hey, invoke expression online 4,321. Take a look at what they're doing there. Oh, they're doing a remove online 2,021. So instead of having to own the entire script and read everything, now all of a sudden you're highlighted in those areas that you really want to focus in on for analysis. So it dramatically reduces the effort to trust a community resource.
You know, I think that's really, really important, and I'm so glad that like the PowerShell Gallery is going to use that. And this is not only for help with the learning, but it helps with the security of the scripts that you're downloading or getting, or the modules that you're getting from some repository. I think this is just totally cool.
Yeah.
You know what?
I don't. But thanks for asking.
I think we've run out of stuff.
Wow.
I think we've two days. We've gotten everybody started on the wonderful world of DSC.
Yeah. Hopefully this has been useful. Lots of experience. By the way, so one of the things I wanted to hope, I hope you really conveyed, was the sense of exploration. The way you succeed with PowerShell is by exploring, right? Show object. Gorgeous thing, because then you get the object and you just explore. What's that? What's that? What's that? Oh, I didn't know that. And I guarantee you, like most of people, like us, me, know barely half of the things that got shipped in PowerShell version 1. It is extraordinarily rich, and there's a lot to it. So explore, explore, explore. We've been showing, oh, you can do that. Oh, you can do that. There's a lot of that to be had. So go explore and share. Sharing is crucial. So,
yeah, so as kind of to wrap and tie everything up together as we kind of exit out of this two-shot production guy. There he goes. I got it. He's trying to sneeze back there. Remember the community and working together and staying connected with what's happening right now. So go out to PowerShell.org, join the forums, get on Twitter, follow hashtag PowerShell, stay up with the Microsoft Virtual Academy
and us.
Dudes, you gotta stay up with at Jay Snover and at the Jason Helmick.
The Jason Helmick.
And stay up with us because we're going to be keeping you informed with.
Oh yeah, there are our hashtags down there. Look at that.
Oh, they had them right there.
That's
us. That's awesome.
Write that down.
Oh, got it. There you go. And also keep in mind, you're not alone in getting through this. So make sure you stay in touch with everybody. Now look, your experience throughout learning about DSC, of course, this is a challenging thing to deal with. This configuration management might be a new concept altogether to you, but it's well worth it. Your business can severely benefit from the agility and the consistency and the lack of drift that this creates. DSC is your friend, and it, as you can tell, it is the future. So get on board with DSC and start working with it. I think you're gonna love it. On behalf of myself.
Don't be drifty.
Ooh, I like that. On behalf of myself, Microsoft, and the MVA, we'd all like to thank the distinguished engineer, Jeffrey Snover, for he's really a busy guy. He really is. And he's taken two whole days plus spending time talking to me about this show. So thank you very much. We are all very grateful for the insight and information that you've provided us. Truly, truly. Also, we want to thank you, because without you signing in, without you watching it, there would be no reason for us to do this. And this is a benefit for everybody. So we'd like to thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget to take the poll questions.
Yeah, got to do that. We really do listen to that stuff. We really do take feedback, and it's very important to us.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Nothing happens at Microsoft unless we can measure it. So we don't get to come back unless there's some measurements that say somebody listened and they thought it was good, or even if they say they thought it was bad, then we can find out why and we can do it. But again,
that's right. So thank you very much, and thanks for joining us for Desired State Configuration, the advanced stuff. And don't forget, start off with the Desired State Configuration, the getting started stuff, just in case. Have a great day, and thanks a lot for joining us.